Okay, hello everyone. I'm also from the University of Minnesota. I'm a PhD student, and I feel very fortunate to be following Rebecca because the work I'm going to be presenting falls right in the same framework. But rather than focusing on the drainage, I'm going to be talking more about the concentration and how that affects our nitrate leaching load estimates. So the core ideas for my talk today, nitrate concentration measurements from suction cup lysimeters have relatively high spatial variability, while the between treatment variance is small. This can introduce errors into calculated nitrate leaching loads and makes interpretation challenging. So in this, what I did is I used two different methods to adjust the nitrate concentration data prior to the load calculation. One was using a covariate to adjust for spatial variability, and the second was adjusting to account for the presence or absence of significant differences in those nitrate concentrations. And so this procedure will remove noise, reject false, and detect true significant differences in concentration data, and that will improve our nitrate load calculations. So this is a suction cup lysimeter. It's commonly used in sandy soils. You install this equipment below ground, and you use a vacuum to pull, to take a sample of the soil solution. And you can do that throughout the growing season without having to, destructively sample. But one of the things to know about these lysimeters is even in the same field and same treatment, they can have very different measured values due to this spatial variability. So it's a huge challenge we face. And like was talked about in the previous presentation, our load is the product of concentration and percolation. So if we have any uncertainty in either the concentration or the percolation, it will adjust our load estimates. And load is really the variable we're interested in. So if we're uncertain about what our concentration is, we're also uncertain about what our load will be. So in some years, nitrate concentration data measured with these lysimeters can be especially noisy. And so in the 2 years we're going to be looking at, 2010 and 2016, prior to any treatments being imposed, the spatial variability we found was around 100%. Between treatments, we found about a 14% coefficient of variation. And within treatments, we saw about 60%. So you can see, based on this variability, it's difficult to make comparisons between the treatments. So it's the calculated values of nitrate leaching load can be extremely challenging to interpret. And we're going to see two different scenarios. One where a control treatment of low or no nitrogen had a greater calculated load than the high N-rate treatment, and one where there's too much variation to detect any significant difference. So the current procedures to calculate nitrate leaching load do not account for this spatial variation found prior to the treatments like I previously described, or to account for the within treatment variability. And they also do not account for whether or not the differences in nitrate concentration between treatments are statistically significant. So what this means is it increases the likelihood of finding false significant differences or failing to find true significant differences. So just in summary, we observed high variation in measured nitrate concentration and need a strategy to account for it when calculating nitrate leaching load. So the objectives of this study were to improve the calculations of nitrate leaching load from our suction cup lysimeters, to account for that spatial variability by using the covariate based on the initial measurements we took, and to identify significant differences between treatments by using a protected multiple comparison approach. And so on to the methods. This is based on data collected from a field study at the Sand Plains Research Farm in Becker, Minnesota. The soil is coarse textured and excessively drained. And we're working in a potato system with a russet Burbank cultivar. And it's from two studies, but they're closely related, one in 2010 and one in 2016. Both studies were a split plot and randomized complete block design with four replicates. Irrigation was the whole plot factor, and nitrogen was the split plot factor in both cases. So in 2010, we had two irrigation treatments. One was a deficit rate, and the other was a full rate, and we had five different nitrogen treatments. And I'm presenting the treatments here just in summary because it's not necessarily important what the differences between the treatments are, but just to give you a sense of these were the nitrogen irrigation treatments we're looking at. And very similar treatments in 2016. We used different strategies, including split application of nitrogen fertilizer, where a sizable amount is applied at emergence, but then throughout the growing season, we're able to apply fertilizer as a UAN and as a simulated fertigation. And this is commonly what growers in the area will do. So for our measurements of concentration, we had one measurement in each plot, and that meant we had one lysimeter installed in each plot at the beginning of each year at a 1.2 meter depth. We collected 22 water samples in 2010 from May to October, and 25 water samples in 2016 around the same time period. And we would take those water samples back to the lab and analyze them for nitrate concentration. And then for percolation, this is one difference between my study and the last presentation we saw. We're just estimating our percolation from a water balance calculation, and this is often what's done previously in the literature. It's a much simpler way to estimate percolation, but all of the estimates are the same for all of our treatments. So that's a huge source of variation too that I'm not even going to be touching in this presentation. For the statistical analysis, we are using SAS proteomics. Nitrate concentrations have a log normal distribution, so we accounted for that. We had three main effects we are considering: irrigation, nitrogen, and sampling date, including their interactions. And we also included a covariate and a covariate by date main effect. And I'll explain in the next few slides what that means. But the pretreatment nitrate concentration was used as our covariate. Years were considered independently because these were two different studies. And date within year was a repeated measure. And we assumed heterogeneous variance and correlation between dates. And we set our type 1 error rate in this study at 0.1. So for the covariate, the lysimeters were installed before any treatments were imposed. And so we were able to take those initial measurements and say, this is what the baseline value of this plot or this lysimeter is. And we had three of those samples in 2010 and four of those samples in 2016. And we were able to use that data in the statistical model to adjust for this initial variation. So the goal is to control for spatial variability, reduce the noise in the nitrate concentration data, and decrease the likelihood of failing to find true significant differences. And then to explain the approach in which we use to assign a mean value to each treatment, we followed this iterative procedure where we asked ourselves a series of questions about whether the main effects were significant on a given date. So on a given date, were irrigation and nitrogen or their interaction significant? If yes, we use the irrigation by nitrogen by date least square mean. If it was not significant, then we asked, was irrigation or nitrogen significant on a given date? And if it was, then we use that mean value for the treatment. And if neither any of those main effects or their interactions were significant, then we forced ourselves to use the overall mean for that date because we found no significant differences on a given date. So it would not be fair to use those values because there's no justification to use those values. So the goal in this part of the procedure is to account for the noise within the nitrate concentration data and protect from the error of falsely finding significant differences between treatments. And like was mentioned before, load is equal to concentration times percolation. And so we're comparing two different methods. One is using the unadjusted measurements that come right from the lysimeters themselves after they've been analyzed. And the other is the adjusted estimates from the analysis I've described. So on to the results. In 2010, we found that irrigation was significant and the interaction was significant, but what we really want to focus on is the date and the by-date interactions, because that's how we're assigning our mean values. And so on three dates, the irrigation by date interaction was significant. On four dates, the nitrogen by date interaction was significant. And then their interaction was significant on three dates. And so that means if you slice by date, you're basically testing the main effect of nitrogen or irrigation on that date. And the covariate in 2010 was significant. And so on the top of this figure, you can see what the per plot values would be assigned to each of the different nitrogen irrigation treatments, and there's a lot of variability. And on the bottom, after we've used our procedure to adjust, you can see that on all but four dates, we chose to use just the mean value because there was no justification to use anything besides the mean value. And that has implications for calculating our nitrate load. So our initial justification for wanting to try out this procedure is we saw in 2010 that N5, which was our high rate of nitrogen applied at the beginning or at emergence, So a large chunk of urea was applied all at once. We found that we had a high N rate treatment that was actually calculated to have a lower load than the control treatment, which doesn't make sense. But if we use the suggested procedure, it lines up better with our, with what we would expect to happen. In 2016, the by date slices for irrigation and nitrogen themselves weren't significant, but we were able to look at a contrast on the control. So we took the control versus all the fertilized treatments, and we were able to find some significant differences. So this is a case where this procedure allowed us to identify significant differences that were hidden before within the variability and parse it out so that we could observe differences between the control and fertilized treatments. So this figure looks similar to what we had in 2010. Lots of variability in the unadjusted treatments, but when we adjust and use that procedure, on the bottom, what's different is we're looking at control versus fertilized. So this is average fertilized as averaged over treatments 2 through 6, where the control is just treatment 1. And so I believe on 9 dates, we were able to observe significant differences and use those in our load calculations. So the differences are relatively small, but if you were to run your statistics just on the calculated load in 2016, you wouldn't find any significant differences. But using this procedure on the bottom, we're able to say that there are true significant differences between the control and fertilized treatments, which matches with what our assumptions would be about how the system works. So in conclusion, in years when nitrate concentration data from suction cup lysimeters is challenging to deal with, using this approach can be useful. It's able to remove noise from the data, reject falsely significant differences, and detect true significant differences between treatments when calculating nitrate leaching load, which is our variable of interest. And overall, incorporation of these calculation procedures is useful to evaluate the efficacy of best management practices to reduce nitrate leaching load, which is really our goal. So in these studies we're working on, we want to know what the reductions in nitrate leaching load are. It might be useful at times to use a procedure like this so we can deal with the variability in the data. And so with that, I want to thank all of those who have supported my research, the Department of Agriculture, the Minnesota Area 2 Potato Research and Promotion Council, the MinDrive program at the University of Minnesota, and the Water Resource Science graduate program. And with that, I thank you all for listening, and I'll take any questions you have. Yeah, in the back. So the way we schedule irrigation at the Sand Plains Research Farm is it's done by the farm staff, but they use the checkbook method to schedule the irrigation. So you take into account what the estimated evapotranspiration is and the precipitation, and then on a given date they irrigate 2 or 3 times a week. The 100% is really refilling the profile to field capacity, where the 85% would be to decrease the, so the difference between the two irrigation treatments is just the volume of water that's replaced. And we do know that there's some uncertainty about whether those methods are the best way to schedule irrigation, whether they're over applying irrigation or not. Right. So, for calculating these water balances, how would you account for? I guess I'm just not understanding the question. I'm sorry.
When you are adjusting the nitrogen.
Yes. Yes. Oh, okay. I didn't take that into account, what the dilution effect might be of precipitation coming into the system.
The second question I have, how does it work in this approach, the effect of solid texture, for example?
I guess the lysimeters are commonly only used in sandy soils. Perhaps some of the variability that we're observing is coming from the way that the percolation is occurring through the sandy soils, and I think it's more complicated than is commonly assumed of just, you know, like piston transport downward. So if you're moving into a finer textured soil, my guess is that your variability would be higher and that you might need to consider a different method to measure concentration, and it might be something like observing tile drainage, like what was done at Lamberton.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just wondering, do you have enough confidence in this statistical analysis from, I mean, I think you kind of have limited data from 2010 to 2016. Do you think you can collect more data and test it at different places before you say this is a method that, it could be a method developed for other people to use,
It's something that we have data from 2011, 2015, and another study in 2016 that this could be applied for. But what really drove us to using this approach was that the data in 2010 and 2016 were they didn't work using the commonly practiced methods. And I tried to develop this procedure from some procedures we would use in other areas where you wouldn't compare means, you wouldn't compare treatment means and yield without having a significant overall effect. So trying to adopt some of those other statistical ideas into a pre-calculation processing. So you can use it for other years, but there might be a cost to doing that as well, where you're reducing the power of your analysis by because the error bars can get rather large in between these treatments. So there are trade-offs, but in years when the data is messy, this might be an appropriate way to deal with it. Yeah. We would apply between 40 and 50 centibars, and I think that's just standard for the porous cups we had. And we would sample between once and twice a week. It would depend on how often our crew was out in the field and if we had any major rainfall events. But it was about on a once-a-week basis.
All right, thank you.